So two leading AI researchers from Salesforce decide to leave and start their own company. What are the differences between an AI native startup and a traditional SaaS company? Well, today we're going to explore that very question. I'm Tom Slaw, the executive director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, a podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today I'm going to be joined by Doug Duker, global leader of customer success at U.com. So we're going to get the insight engine humming here. Doug, welcome to Tectonic. Nice to see you again. Tell me a little bit about your role at U.com.
Sure. So as leading customer success globally, I start with the very early conversations with prospects. I lead pre-sales as well as post-sales with professional services, training, our ongoing customer success functions, as well as tech support.
So really, anything
technical that is customer facing.
Yeah, so all the traditional services are in play there. And so what specific capabilities does U.com provide for enterprise companies there? Tell us a little bit about what the company puts on the table.
Sure. So, I mean, we are entirely enterprise focused. We started in the consumer space about five years ago, but in the last 18 months or so, completely shifted focus to enterprise and the unique needs of enterprises. And so, you know, enterprises have lots of concerns about AI, and we try to fill as many of those holes as possible. So first and foremost is security. Our entire platform, zero data retention and no learning. So any deep, dark secret that a company wants to put into AI is safe on our platform to use. That's very, very important to organizations. The next piece that we think is also really important is being fairly agnostic to the AI models. We support all of the frontier models, all under ZDR and all under no learning. So that allows us, as each of these models leapfrog, you know, ChatGPT 5 comes out, or Anthropic 4 or 5 that came out last week. We have all of those models available within our platform. So customers don't have to worry about picking, you know, making a bet on one of those and not having the most current technology. We work really hard on hallucinations. Our founders pioneered a lot of the science behind generative AI and been very thoughtful about the risks that hallucinations bring to the credibility of AI. And so we offer our own proprietary news index and our own proprietary web index, which allows us to verify, you know, what we're researching and what we're bringing back for customers. So the news index is super important because LLMs tend to stop their learning at a particular point in time. And so when you have a new pope or you have changes in, you know, all sorts of things that happened yesterday in the news, can really fundamentally change the search results for a business in profound ways. And so our ability to bring news in real time as well as this web and then to cite absolutely everything that we do with references on the web is a strong commitment to reducing hallucination. You can't eliminate it. The LLMs are getting better as well, but we understand that businesses need reliable information. They need verifiable information. And so the ability to do that is a big key for us. And then, you know, the other piece is really around personalized hands-on training. All of us in the AI space, we get caught up with AI enthusiasts. But in the reality in businesses, that's 5 to 7% of their workforce. And how do you get to the other 90-95% of knowledge workers who are working a 40-50-60 hour week and don't have time to play with technology or even care, you know, unless it's going to really add value? And so we offer a very detailed, very personalized hands-on training that uses AI to tailor each hands-on exercise to the individual. So if you're in HR, you get HR exercises. If you're legal, you get legal exercises. If you're in IT, you're going to write Python or something, right? And so that allows users to see themselves in the AI and see their jobs in the AI so that as they're doing exercises, we hear this all the time, that those employees are actually using things from class professionally. So this is really a great way to get that reach into knowledge workers who are new to AI and make it relevant for them. And the last piece about all of this is APIs. You know, you don't always want to use our user interface. You may want to embed us into other solutions, both internal as well as external. And so our entire platform is available via API so that our customers can not only use the frontier models or our news index or our web search index, but even agents and prompts they've created on our platform, they can then expose as an API as part of an end-to-end solution. So
you put a lot on the table there. Now I'm going to back up all the way to the part where you had this fork in the road to go from consumer to enterprise. What were you providing at the consumer level for initially?
So we had a search product in the market early on, even before the LLMs came out, founders are very, very focused on search and trustworthy search. As the LLMs came in, we were the first provider to join a web index and an LLM in the same solution set, in the same chat. Okay. And so we've taken that consumer product and then layered in all the enterprise stuff, analytics and SSO, and you know all the other cast logging and tracking and you know SKIM and you know other services mm-hmm. that businesses would need to manage this type of tool.
And then as you were describing what you guys do there, so you are providing help for all types of use cases, because you mentioned it could be HR, it could be IT, et cetera. So just help me understand. So somebody says, hey, we want to do a better job of using AI within our HR department. Like that's our problem, right? And right. So they're raising their hand and they're coming to you, and it sounds like you're helping them. Is it identifying use cases and making sure employees are trained on it? Tell me how you wrestle that to the ground, just so I get a sense of that.
We start first with the maturity model, right? Like mm-hmm. where, and of course, everybody's immature today, but what does good look like? What does better look like? What does great look like adopting these technologies? Mm-hmm. And then what are the use cases that have the most ROI attached to it? Mm-hmm. Yep. Sometimes that's really super clear. We have mm-hmm. this problem we have to solve. And a lot of people are just new to AI and they have no idea. And so mm-hmm. we have some agents that will actually do research and talk about specific industries and specific roles and what are the best types of job functions that lend itself to AI. And whether that's writing or researching or creating, there's plenty of them out there. HR is a great example because everything from, you know, open-ended questions about all the benefits or recruiting. And I have a great agent that lets you practice an interview. So you upload mm-hmm. a resume and it grades all your questions, but it also facilitates the conversation. So you can practice an interview while at the same time learn how to create better interview questions, right? So there's lots of different things you can do for HR, as there are for really all business units.
Okay, that helps me a lot. And so now I'm curious, when you have these use cases, so let's say it's an HR, you're working with, you know, customer A, you stand up, let's say it is the benefits solution. Here's how you use AI to help employees, they can self-serve, blah, blah, blah. You stamp that out. Is your objective then to say, look, that's a great solution for any HR department. That's what we take to market. Elsewhere then, as each one of these use cases are maturing, is that the
easy answer is yes. The hard answer is everyone's a little different, right?
So that's what I want to understand. And I also I'm super curious from a vertical perspective.
Sure.
I mean, are you seeing, you know, that there's, you know, in terms of saying, hey, we're really going to focus a lot on, I'll make it up, healthcare, because we see a lot of good solutions there, as opposed to finance or whatever. How are you guys thinking about that landscape?
Sure. So, I mean, first and foremost, we're a platform, right?
Yeah.
And but the platform is widely applicable mm-hmm. to all AI needs across, you know, all sorts of
businesses. A lot of vertical industries, yeah.
I think that's super important. It's an interesting challenge because in every industry has HR. Every industry,
right, for sure.
People, and sales and marketing. And yet every industry has unique things as well, right? And so there's less nuance industry to industry. Like I grew up in CRM. I've worked for CRM companies most of my life, right? And what you do in life sciences for CRM is very different than what you do in, mm-hmm. right? But there's so much commonality in the building blocks of AI across all knowledge workers that the need to specifically verticalize is a little less necessary. There are certainly, you get into PII and HIPAA and GDPR. I mean, there's other things that come into play around confidentiality and those sorts of things. But this is very widely applicable across kind of all industries. We do have industries, I think all software companies, somehow industries gravitate to you. Mm-hmm. So we have some deep penetration in some industries.
Certain industries, yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily that we were going after it as much as they were coming after us. A lot of what we do with vectorizing private data, so this is another big piece for us, is take your proprietary data, take your terabytes of stuff you have in SharePoint or, you know, someplace else in your organization and either expose that to chat, maybe use an API and expose it on your website, maybe behind a paywall, are all very common use cases that we're seeing with our customers today is... Yeah. Gosh, we have all this information. We want to chat with it. We want to make it easier to consume. But with that comes all kinds of guardrails and other sorts of things as well. Like your website doesn't want to be writing your person's resume and, you know, all the other that at least LLMs would prefer to trying to be pleasing and fulfill. So
yeah,
figuring out the guardrails as well and making sure that we're bringing solutions to the market.
So as you describe that landscape, because, you know, our perspective at TSIA, I mean, we've been documenting these use cases for several years now, right? I mean, real big ROIs, very clear use cases for AI, takes out, you know, a lot of effort, et cetera. So like that MIT article that came out and said, you know, 95% of people aren't getting an ROI. And everyone's like, well, we're spending all this money on AI. It's like, to me, that's a, you know, false negative, right? But, you know, I'm curious, there is this last mile problem that people are recognizing where companies maybe have bought some AI capabilities, maybe they've deployed something like Copilot or whatever, but they're like, gosh, I just, you know, I know I'm not getting all the juice out of it. As you guys look at that, what are some of the things that you're doing to close down that last mile gap? Because is it education? Is it technical? I mean, like, what are the big things that you guys do to help customers actually, you know, get there?
So what's really interesting is we've all lived through eras of transformations, right? Mm-hmm. You know, ERP and supply chain, all these big business transformation projects.
Yep.
I think this is the biggest transformation we'll see probably in my lifetime.
I completely agree.
Because
I agree with that.
You know, if you look at pre-AI productivity tools, mm-hmm. they were all invented in the 80s, right? We have 40 years of instincts. My 80-year-old mom knows how to use this technology. My 4-year-old granddaughter knows how to use this technology. Or, you know, they know how to chat. They know how to type. They know how to, you know. And so we're asking people to think differently. And this isn't a one and done. This isn't a top-down edict of, hey, we're putting in CRM. You need to do your forecast, right? And here's very discreetly how you use this tool and how it makes you perhaps more productive or make the organization achieve their results. It's much more personalized. It's been a long time since an organization offered an Excel class or a Microsoft Word class or a PowerPoint class, but we kind of have to go back to those transformational fundamentals of lunch and learns and office hours and really getting involved with the organizations and the individuals to make sure that this is soaking in and reinforcing the positives and addressing the challenges. Not every problem can be solved with AI. And so I think there's some fatigue or some frustration if you go after something that's too big to bite or not well suited. But there's so much knowledge worker adoption that's possible, but it's not, hey, we installed this software, we did a webinar, and good luck. It has got to be a cadence of ongoing engagement on a magnitude that is bigger than any other project the companies have done. I don't think businesses have budgeted for this. I don't think they've imagined that it's this big of a transformation in general. Mm-hmm. And so this is where you see the Harvard study and all the failures is they bought the software, maybe there was some training, and no one has figured it out. And so, you know, we take this very personalized approach to training, we gamify it a bit, and we have great results from our customers, both ramping skills. The level of questions go way down as people train and certify, which is obvious. We see it in the usage volume and, you know, other ways of looking at ROI, but our customers are finding just tremendous adoption and success. But it's because we're paying attention to it and we're driving it, not because we're hoping that they figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, listening to you describe the fact that it is such a big transformation, and it is really acknowledging the fact that you have to retool your workforce at a very, you know, fundamental level. And as I was listening to you, I was thinking about, you know, 20 years I've been hiring researchers, and everybody that shows up, they know how to use PowerPoint, they know how to use Excel, they know how to write in Word, they know how to, or Google Docs. I mean, like, there's these tools that they're using, and it's like, yeah, it's no big deal. But we literally, as a research team over the last couple of years, we're constantly meeting as a team and learning from each other for the use cases of AI for research, because they're just, it's so different. And they're constantly new capabilities, and there's new, and so you got to really lean into the fact that, you know, it's like people are like ground level here, and you got to, you know, help them along the way. And I do agree. I think a lot of companies are underestimating that, and they're kind of throwing tools out there and thinking people are going to magically, you know, adopt them. And, you know, in quite frankly, something like ChatGPT is a false positive because, yeah, you can go in and do some really cool things with it as an individual. That's different than embedding the capabilities in enterprise workflows. That's different.
Exactly.
You got to help people. Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence. So one thing I ask every AI startup that I talk to, I love to have this conversation, is how in the heck you're figuring out how to price your technology. Because I'm watching this thing unfold, and I'll put two things on the table. If you look at user-based pricing in a world where the user base is probably going to be flat or shrinking because AI unlocks labor efficiency, that's not a growth. You mentioned CRM. I mean, Salesforce, every time my customer hires more salespeople, I'm making more money in the old world, but they're not going to do that anymore. So that dog's not going to hunt. Consumption-based pricing that is like you're trying to figure out some kind of cost model or X amount of tokens or whatever, I don't think that dog's going to hunt either in the long term. How do you guys think about, we use this term value leakage, if you unlock a use case, let's pick the HR one. Let's say that, the benefits thing, you get that thing up and running, you just saved them a bunch of FTEs, their employees are way more productive getting answers. So you just unlocked all this value. You don't want to have this little price point because there's value leakage there, right? How are you guys approaching that?
Well, I think in my career in enterprise software, everyone flirts with value-based pricing, right? But it's really hard to quantify in a way that benefits both parties fairly, right? And I think it's very early in this AI journey to make that bet. But we also recognize that adoption happens across organizations at different levels for different people. And it's very hard to predict who your rock stars are going to be. Some people latch onto this and just it changes their life and they're really just profoundly engaged. And other people, they're too busy and whatever. But so we're all consumption-based. Think in terms of a site license, and we will size the queries and all of that to based on number of users and some models we have around consumption and those sorts of things around adoption. Mm-hmm. But we think it's important for everybody to try it and for everyone to have exposure to it. And when you sell seats, then it's the haves and the have-nots, and that creates attention. We want lots of collaboration. We want lots of sharing. I created this amazing prompt and I'm going to share it with my department. Or I'm going to share it with the entire company because it's relevant in that space. And so we don't want situations where somebody doesn't have it. And so, this allows people to try it. It allows people to go really, really deep. And
So let's go down this trail on consumption. And I get that. You don't want friction, right? Hey, everybody in the company, you have X amount of, consumption here or whatever, and whoever uses it, which is great. Two things on that. So number one, because again, what you already said, it's so unpredictable. The uptake, right? So you could come to a company and you could say, okay, we worked with a company that had 1,000 employees. We just deployed to them. Their consumption looked like this. You're 1,000 employees. This is what you could, because people need to budget. Right. And all of a sudden they go through the roof, this second company, right? And they're just, it's like a utility bill, right? All of a sudden, you get this big electric bill this summer. You're like, what? Who's turning down a thermostat, right? Right. So How are you modeling and navigating that with customers? Because they want some bumpers, right? They don't want to be like, you have no idea.
First it starts with analytics. There should be no surprise on the burn, right? And so we're looking at lots of data around that and the usage and the adoption and, what is healthy chatting? What is exceptionally large amounts of chatting? What's under, right? And I think this is still an emerging statistic. If you look at adoption over time, but also assuming that people aren't, surfing their vacation schedules and, you know, doing lots of personal stuff and creating images of cats and, you know, whatever else that, you know, people do with commercial, with consumer products. If you're bumping up to your allocated consumption, there's got to be massive ROI. Like, this should be the problem that you want to have, is that your people are being so productive that they're using this all up and it should pay for itself to then extend.
So that leads me to the second observation on consumption-based pricing. So one is, you know, modeling it so people aren't surprised. What this could look like. I'm going to assert that still in the world of AI, I wouldn't want to be your pricing person. You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's tough right now. I don't care who you are. It's tough because it's such early days. So that's one thing. Like, how do you kind of figure that out? Second one, though, you just put on the table is, if consumption is high and people are paying more, they're going to go to this conversation of, okay, yeah, I'm using it a lot, but what is the ROI? They're going to ask that question.
Sure.
And so you can't just assume that, oh, well, trust me, if you're using it that much, you must have a great ROI. They're going to say, okay, Doug, show me the ROI, right? That's when that conversation goes.
So, you know, ROI is always an interesting thing, and productivity ROI is always a bit subjective.
Yeah. Like,
I think we all agree that, you know, the science is not as absolute as it might be in some industries, but there's plenty of leading indicators. And so one of the things is, as we certify users on the platform, we survey them. Like, is this going to add value to you? How much time are you going to save? You know, these sorts of things. And so we see 94% of all of our certified users confident that learning these skills are going to improve their productivity at work. 99% of everyone surveyed says they'll save at least an hour a week. A third of those will save at least 5 hours a week. And five is the top of our chart. Well, we could probably add more granularity to that and get more. But at 5 hours a week, that's an hour a day. That's pretty substantial when you think about overall productivity. And so so that's one, and that's a self-reported from the end. I've done this training. This is amazing. Look what it's going to do for me. We also have then, you know, usage, right? So who's chatting? What's that distribution? What are the types of insights you can look at across the organization? Who are the leaders? What are they doing? You know, who are the laggards? What aren't they doing? You know, where's kind of the averages fit in? And you can drive lots of customer success activity around, you know, adoption and what's going on in the organization and those sorts of things. When you find those pockets of high adoption or high, then you drill into that. We actually have an agent that you can run within our platform that at the end of your chat thread, you can actually call it up and say, how much time did I just save? And it'll actually do an analysis of, hey, we did all this research for you. We did this writing for you based on industry standards and norms. You know, we just saved you 6 hours, right? And that kind of insight is impractical to run with every chat, but it is a great way to spot check where's your usage and what are the types of behaviors you're getting out of the platform. And so, you know, it's really a combination of all of this that drives some clarity on ROI, right?
And since I listen to you, so I'll give you an example here from a previous guest. And this is an exercise that we call closing the value loop, right? So they buy your platform, they expect, you know, some type of value that they want to get out of it. You want to close that loop and say, look, you got that value, right?
Right.
So this particular platform was used by salespeople for competitive analysis. And the way that they close that value loop is they could basically say, look at the close rate for the salespeople that are actually using the platform. And they had an adoption issue, right? And unfortunately, it's a minority of your salespeople are really leaning in, but compare that to the close rate of the folks that aren't. And there's a big delta there, right? So now you have a clear, so that type of math, I think, is going to become so critical for every AI solution provider. Like you're saying, you're following the heat. You're looking at the adoption. And then when you say, oh, these high adopters, you know, the next click over is the ability to say, what performance metrics could we look at for the high adopters versus the non-adopters? The ROI becomes crystal clear.
As a platform, it's harder. Like if I had a point solution using AI, you can do that kind of use case that long. The fact that we have this kind of open, you know, spectrum, you know, and that's really on my customer success reps to then go have those conversations, but it's also on the customer to have someone on the other side who cares and is participating in all of this.
In the conversation, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a bit of a balance. We try to drive it as best we can. And then it's up to the customer to kind of meet us in the middle and collaborate on that. But you're absolutely right. Anywhere where you can quantify usage and adoption, we can correlate usage of users with certifications and the just a
strong correlation.
We also, you know, in different industries, like we have customers who are using our agents in a call center where they're prompting, the agent is prompting the call center agent on what to ask on the phone, right? Mm-hmm. So usage is really high because it's very transactional, right? That's going to be very different than I'm a researcher or I'm a writer. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I use it kind of sporadically. And so... Yeah.
So what kind of metrics, because you mentioned having that partner on the other side, right, that you're working with who cares and it's like, hey, you know, we really want to be successful here. And I was just reading an article that was saying that with AI deployments, some people are, I've seen use cases where the ROI is crystal clear. Other people are like, gosh, it's hard for me to quantify, you know, am I, quote, being successful or not? What type of metrics do you encourage your customers to focus on? And so you mentioned a couple of, you know, certifications, there's basic usage. Anything else that you know, really focus on?
Collaboration is the other piece. While you're very personal sometimes with your mm-hmm. use of AI, where you're sharing it with colleagues, where you're sharing it in a department setting or even company-wide setting, it's clear that, you know, there's, you're tackling a bigger use case, something that, you know, if I create an agent on our platform and I share it with all my coworkers and now they're all using it as well, we can see that. Yep. We can see, what is this? What does that traffic look like? Who else is picking this up? And so there's that kind of multiplying or exponential factor of, I built this prompt once and now it's benefiting mm-hmm. you know, people in the organization. That holds a little bit more weight to me
okay.
than just individual doing their own thing, right? And yeah. so, you know, which is very important too, and can be yeah. real profound. Well, I don't write anything anymore without staying on a prompt and mm-hmm. providing a little brain dump and, you know, getting my grammar and spelling correct on the first try. Like, that's just yeah. amazing. But, and the other thing that we're tracking a little bit more now on as well is depth of chat threads. In this prior Google world of, I'm going to go run a search, I'm going to get results, and I'm going to take them someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
What I see customers do is, what are you going to do next? Because AI can do that next for you. Like, if mm-hmm. you've done research, I did one for a customer the other day, it was research on KPIs for their business. And it was a great narrative. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with that? Well, I'm going to summarize it. Okay, great. So my next prompt was, put mm-hmm. all that stuff in a table. Right. It yeah. gave me the calculations, right? And then my next prompt was, write a letter to my colleagues explaining what we're doing. And like, all of that can be prompts, you know, to yes. further those transactions. Not just saving your time on the research, but saving your time in the reformatting, saving your time in the communication as well. And yeah. so depth of chat threads is something we're starting to look at as well, as to, are you getting the economics value of all of this context and all the things you can do? Yeah, on our platform, you can actually switch LLMs mid-process. So oh, wow. if you're in the middle of one, be like, I really want to ask Gemini this question. Mm-hmm. switch to Gemini, or switch to an agent that uses Gemini, and then switch back to, you know, Anthropic for something else. You can do all that in the same thread with the context of the same thread as well. And customers are just starting to pick up on strengths and benefits, pick the right LLM for the right solution, and leverage the technology and the context to keep going, to keep the dialogue with that data going, versus I'm a dump into wordsmith it myself is not as efficient.
Interesting observation based on what you just said there about switching LLMs. I think, you know, one of the things that is very clear now, if you are using, like if you really are trying to leverage AI in your past, sort of your infancy in it, is there is such a difference in the responses from these LLMs. When I do my research, I ask Gemini a question, I ask ChatGPT a question, you get, and I think, and I'm just putting this on the table for our listeners, for ones that may just be like, I've got one model, I use it all the time or whatever. A, be aware that these models now, it's crystal clear, they have different strengths.
Yeah.
You know, and those strengths are constantly changing. Yeah. One of the main reasons we founded TSIA almost 20 years ago was to establish accurate operational benchmarks for technology service businesses that just didn't exist anywhere. Benchmarking is a killer tool to quickly understand your strengths and weaknesses. Benchmarking sets you on a journey that starts with where you are, points to what is possible, and identifies the business practices that will get you there. That's why I am super excited we decided to offer a free version of TSI's industry-leading benchmarks with Performance Optimizer. Performance Optimizer is an easy-to-use benchmarking tool you can access from the TSI website. You can assess operational strengths and weaknesses in multiple areas, like customer success, professional services, support services, etc. And the Optimizer results prescribe specific actions to address specific challenges and opportunities. This is an amazing offer, and I am so proud we are doing this for all of our loyal Tectonic listeners who may not be corporate TSIA members. To check it out, visit tsia.com/free. I'm just intellectually curious what your perspective is, since this is what you guys do, right? You're bringing in access to all these models. That marketplace is it's so fractured already, and people are going after, you know, I want to do the coding thing. I want to do this one. And I don't see it, that changing. And also I don't see this sort of one ring to rule them all, right? Where like there's some model that is just like, you know, we are OpenAI, we're going to be the model, we're going to be quote the winner. I think that it's clear that's never going to happen. But so I'm curious what what's your perspective on it?
We're very agnostic. One of the things that we've learned with knowledge workers is when you look at that 90% who aren't fans of this and not enthusiasts, they don't care. And they don't want to spend the time going like, oh my gosh, now I need to change everything to GPT-5. Now I have to get crappy. Like no one wants that. Yeah. They want a reliable answer to their question. Right. And so one of the things we've done is we've built this mode called auto, which is the default for all prompting, where we look at the complexity and what you're asking, and we go and select the models for you. So
I'll click into this. That's super cool. And that makes so much sense to do that. So as you provide that wrapper to this ever-changing landscape, again, who's ever in charge at your company, that the people that have to basically make sure that auto is tuned based on where the models, that's changing like weekly, right? It's like somebody leapfrogs.
It is. Wow. It is. Yeah. But, you know, some of it's just a complexity thing. It's, do you need a reasoning model? Do you need something that's faster? Cause it's just a question and answer. Some of it's that, some of it is, you know, is this research? This is a deep research. Is this, I want to create an image or I want to write code or, you know, so some of it's just understanding kind of the nature of the question. What we do in auto mode then is we break your question up into sub questions and we serve up those sub questions out to the LLMs, out to the web. Even those sub questions could be fulfilled by different LLMs.
Yeah.
Like if you really need, I don't know, table built, Gemini's really good at making tables. So so we have that flexibility as well. But what businesses tell us unequivocally is our users don't want to spend time understanding.
Oh, I 100% agree on that. And
so
you have to be
auto mode. Allows us to take that responsibility for them. Yeah. And with the override option, like if you want to go down and pick Claude 4.0 and you just love that, you only want to use it, great. You can certainly override that. But for the vast majority of knowledge workers, they're pretty happy with us picking and bringing them back great answers with citations and current news.
Yeah, for sure.
And all the aspects to that without ever having to worry about which of these models is fulfilling it.
So I wanted to click into this topic with you around services within an AI startup. So you have a legacy and enterprise, you know, software. You and I both know what traditional service organizations look like. They've been pretty static for, like you mentioned, 40 years. 40 years about only innovation has been customer success with SaaS companies.
Right.
Pretty much, you know, professional services, support, education, you know. It is what it is. And now we have these AI startups and a couple of, you know, assertions we have on it. First of all, we believe that this AI rollout into the world is going to be service intensive. Customers need help. It's not like you're just going to make this killer platform and go, and by the way, my support's just a bunch of AI bots and the product implements itself. And so we don't really need services in our AI startup. I don't buy into that narrative, number one. But I'm curious, as you are building out a service capability, are there any differences you're seeing from previous generations, or is it really pretty much the same? Just, you know, what are you seeing on the ground?
There are profound differences in my estimation. The first one is I talk with my recruiters, my HR folks about this all the time. The first 40 or 50% of the skills, whether your pre-sales, professional services, customer success support, are the same. Yeah. Everyone has got to be super technical. Everyone's got a prompt. Everyone has to be certified on our platform at a mastery level with distinction. You have to be the best of the best. You have to be the top guns of this technology because it's moving fast to try to bridge that in any other way. So before you specialize in pre-sales or post-sales or any other things, you got to be just super technical. You have to understand what vectorized data is, and you have to understand how all this stuff fits together. And then you have to figure out across industries and across roles. You have to understand and be empathetic to the needs of sales and marketing versus legal versus finance.
So can I interrupt you there, right there? So, you know, what you're saying is, look, if you're going to be in services in an AI startup, foundational layer is you actually have to be really good at leveraging the technology, whatever AI technology your company is, you know, in your case, your platform. And so that could be one of two profiles. That could be somebody who, hey, I've been in, you know, support for, you know, 10 years of my life, and I really understand traditional technical support. Now I got to sort of upgrade or whatever and get this foundational layer. Or you could get somebody who's like, I've never been in support, but I love AI. I'm like AI native. You know what I mean? I've been on this from day one and I'm super good. So those two people knock on your door for a job, right? And the one's like, hey, I don't know any of the AI stuff yet. I'm willing to try, you know, to go get, you know, ramped up, but I really do. I've been a great support professional. And this other person's like, I don't really know anything about support, but man, I'm a rock star. Right there, if you had to like make the call, it's like these are the only two people you get to choose. Who would you hire?
Well, I mean, we can't underestimate the business acumen of the role, right?
Okay.
The other 50% of that skill is who's the best pre-salesperson, who's the best, you know, professional.
Okay. Yeah.
Who's an engagement manager that knows what to do? I think, you know, Thomas, the question I have is, first and foremost, you have to have had a technical background at some point, right?
Okay, interesting.
And then that proximity of that technical, like if you're a Fortran person, like probably not all that interested. But if you've been doing some JavaScript, maybe you've dabbled in Python a little bit, you know, your technical skills are a bit closer to your professional skill, that's the person I want to talk to. We can teach them the AI, but they have to be technical, hands-on, hungry, and interested in learning all this stuff, because there's no end point to this. It's continuous learning.
This is a really interesting thread to me, because I just want to chip on a little bit more and to see if I'm on track with how you're viewing it. Let's take a role like customer success again. So customer success has been around for like about 20 years with the advent of SaaS. If I look at the profile of customer success managers, there's a big spectrum there. Some of them are technical, like they're like, hey, I really know the product. But there's a lot of them that never needed to be technical.
Correct.
Right? I mean, they're like, hey, I'm making sure that, you know, administration issues, I'm making sure that you understand, you know, I'm watching if you're not adopting, but I really don't have to be the power user. And
right.
I think what you're asserting is you're saying, look, I don't care if you're a CSM or you're going to be a professional service person or whatever, you have to really have chops on the technology now.
You do. And I've worked in shops that are both ways, right?
Yeah.
I led customer success at Salesforce for a while, and we certified in absolutely everything and very technical, probably the most technically astute implementers of Salesforce in the world, the customer success team. I've worked in places where it's all relationship and they didn't know the product at all. And there's merit in both for certain situations. But in the startup space, you know, we're wearing a lot of hats, right? And we're very hands-on. The other thing is, we're constantly selling. We're constantly selling to end users who are skeptical, who have tried all these consumer products and have opinions. If you can't drop at any moment and do a demo of our latest feature, I don't have time for like, oh, I'm your customer success person who doesn't know anything and let me go find someone to demo this for you. Like, we have just got to be super responsive on these things.
Yeah.
And when a customer says, tell me about such and such, bring it up and show it in the application. And, you know, there is a little bit of deer in headlights on prompting. I'll say that though. There's like, you know, sometimes it's hard to just generate a great prompt on the fly, but we're getting better at that. But it's just people want to know now. They want their question answered. If you don't answer it, somebody else will. And so, you know, anybody who's customer facing has got to be, and everyone certifies on our demo. Everyone certifies on our corporate pitch. It's so important to be on point and be a practitioner and be in the product all the time. Like within our internal instance, my team tops usage above anybody else in the company because we're just pounding it all the time with those and webinars and things we're doing. Customer success reps are doing, you know, office hours and one-on-one sessions with a user who's struggling with a thing. And it's not a tech support thing, it's an adoption thing. So we're very focused on that.
What, and then let's talk a little bit about, so I thought it was a great conversation on the sort of the skills profile for service people in this next wave. What about organizational structure? Again, traditionally we've had these very stovepipe service organizations.
Yeah.
Support was different than CS, was different than PS. Anything different there that you're observing?
Well, I mean, I've spent a lot of time studying customer success and studying customer success organizations throughout my career. And that stovepiping is a problem, in my opinion. And yeah. So starting with this comment that 40, 50% of the skills are the same, so are the knowledge bases, so are the tools, so are, you know, where we go, the portal for the team. Everyone's functioning off the same foundation. I think that's super important, partially because we're a startup and we wear multiple hats from time to time. But I just think philosophically, silos create problems in continuity, right? We all talk about the customer journey. No customer wants to take a journey across silos. They want to have a continuous experience. And really, a continuous experience that starts at pre-sales, a continuous experience that starts at marketing and sales, you know, carries through the life of the relationship. Yep. And so we're working really hard on aligning our marketing messages and our go-to-market message with what we're delivering so that the customer doesn't have to be re-educated at any point in the process.
So I think, you know, as I listen to you, and I agree with everything you're saying, you know, but it's like motherhood and apple pie, right? It's like tech companies have wanted that vision forever, right? We want the marketing message to be lined up with what we are doing. We want it to be a frictionless experience. But then we put these organizational structures in place, quite frankly, which did not support that. Very right. Clunky handoffs, very stovepipe. So we believe on the service side, there's going to be a lot more fluidity in how you're deploying your resources. And people are not going to think in terms of, oh, I'm the CS person, not the PS person. Correct. It's going to be like, I'm a service person who's working at this part of the workflow, whatever, with the customer. I think, I really believe it's going to be sort of a different mentality within the service organization. And the final question I have for you is around just the actual types of services that you're putting in front of customers, what you charge for, what is just included with the platform. How is that different than what you saw previously?
So, you know, it's interesting because in these businesses, I think there's a top down and a bottom up, right? The bottom up is we want to enable our entire workforce, right? And to me, that's more of a traditional customer success motion. It's webinars, it's adoption, it's taking our training, it's gamifying that, it's reports and analytics and, you know, all those adoption plays is really the bottoms up. Top down is a professional services play. We have what we call an AI factory, which is kind of our version of a center of excellence, where we're going to come in and find the high ROI use cases and develop them for the customer, whether it's private RAG solution of their data or some end-to-end AI problem we're going to solve. Integrating multiple systems and those sorts of things. And so we're doing that very successfully, embedding our solutions even into customers' own tools and those sorts of things. Well, and then there's an overlap. And even so my lead in professional services was a customer success person for me at Salesforce. And so we have this conversation all the time of like, I got to kind of do the customer success thing too, right? To your point. And yes, that's exactly right. Like I'm not going to put professional services and customer success in the same overlapping channel conflicty kind of situation, whichever model the customer is pretty much led with, that organization seems to take care of that customer. And you know, it's really about maturity, right? If you put a maturity model in place, do you want your organization to grow the maturity slow over time, or do you want to hire us to bring that maturity in and deliver you best in class solutions kind of day one? And so we can take either approach or a hybrid approach of that, depending what the customer is looking for.
And the mentality within the company in terms of the service business, do they view that as, hey, this is a business for us in terms of, you know, there's important revenue here, there's important margin here, or is it, you know, it's an enabler for the platform? How would you say they look at it?
It's a little of both. Because the technology moves so fast, I've grown up in a partner ecosystem kind of setup, right? And we are certainly starting to cultivate partners, but it's really hard to keep partners up to speed. Sure, the level of quality and what we're trying to deliver is replicated through other third parties. So while we're starting to do some of that, we also understand the strategic value of being close to our product management team, close to our engineers, and capturing that feedback and following that right into, you know, so much of our innovation is what customers want, as well as what's becoming emerging and possible with the AI as well. And so, you know, I would not want to give up the professional services touch point with these customers entirely because the feedback loop is so very important right now.
Yeah. I mean, my observation is listening to you, I think the marriage between the technical capabilities, service capabilities that really get the unlock for the customer. I mean, I think that's the right secret sauce right now.
Yeah.
Where the ecosystem is. I don't think there's enough partners out there that are, to your point, up to speed. And also if you have a partner, you know, historically we love partners, right? Arms and legs, you don't have to hire those people, they get a scale. But if, you know, if they're not super close to that technology right now, that's hard. It's hard to get them, you know, where they need to be to get the unlock. So, I mean, I think this first wave of startups like yourself, I already believe strongly it's going to be a combination of, you know, unique technical capabilities you're putting on the table, like your platform, that is value add, that, you know, from the general models, with a robust and really good service capability that gets the unlock. I mean, I think if you don't have both of those ingredients right now, based on the maturity, I think, you know, customers aren't going to get the value. It's going to be really hard for them to get the value.
It is. And that Harvard study basically says that, right?
Yeah.
And so we want to be the exception to that rule.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. Well, I'm watching the clock here. It's a great conversation. And I really appreciate you you coming in and giving us a little bit of visibility into what it's like to be at a startup right now, you know, that is in the guts of, you know, these AI capabilities. I think it's thrilling times for sure. Stuff's moving really fast. And we always end these episodes with a question of the day. And my question for our audience is, there is a new wave of AI native companies being born. Are you ready to compete against them? Cheers, everybody.